Hello, Misfits. This is Kevin.
And this is Kate.
Welcome to Horrorwood.
Before we start, are you watching or keeping up with the Rust case?
Rust.
The movie, like the Alec Baldwin.
Oh, the gun that went off on set. I have not kept up.
I have been like catching all the little clips that I can from Court TV on YouTube and stuff. Because I do want to cover it at some point, but like probably after it's all said and done.
Yeah,
like
I hear you.
A ways down the road, but... Oh boy, like they showed, there's this one video that shows a compilation of the body cam footage. And it's not of the scene.
Right.
But it's of Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who is the armorer. And it's just interesting because no one really knew how serious it was at first. So there's like a lot of joking around. Not a lot, I should say.
Sure.
But it's just interesting. And oh, the lawyer for Hannah can't stand him.
Yikes.
But anyway, so yeah, are you all watching? I have a feeling maybe some of you are keeping up with it, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that.
I didn't realize it was in trial right now.
Hannah's is. Yeah, I think Alex is later.
Okay, so are they suing or like who? What's happening?
Well, I mean, yes, there are lawsuits about, but she is on trial, I believe, for involuntary manslaughter.
But
the only thing, like, even if she gets convicted, which, you know, we'll see, but I think the max sentence I read was like 18 months.
Okay.
So I don't know. There's a whole lot to it, and I can't really speak to it because I haven't dug into it far enough, but it's just kind of fascinating to watch and horrific as well. So there's that. On a different note, are you doing anything for the Oscars this weekend?
No, I have to work.
Oh, poop.
Until 8:39.
Oh.
So I probably will miss a good chunk of it. I usually get to see the last like third when I get home from work.
Yeah.
So I'll watch that. I'll probably also, if I can stream it on my phone, maybe watch it while I'm out. I probably shouldn't say that in public. I'm not going to do that because I'm going to be working hard.
Working hard, as always.
5 to 9, not 9 to 5. Oh.
Wow. That was beautiful.
Thank you, Kate.
The reason I ask is because it's an Oscars-themed episode this
week. Oscars.
And I did not think that there was a lot about this person. Turns out, found a lot. So
Kate
is
this expert researcher. No, for real though, and deep dives. You deep dive.
I love do. It. I go for a long
Good.
Swim, but maybe you all hate that because I don't know if it's like boring to get all the background information.
I never think it's boring.
But all this to say that this is a two-parter.
Oh, bo-bo.
But I'm going to give you everything prior to the Oscars airing. So just know that. And that's part of the reason why this episode is coming out a day late, because there was just so much and I thought I was going to fit it all into one. And then I counted how many pages of notes I had and I was like, you know what? No, I can't talk for that long. So we're splitting it into two. But again, you will have everything prior to the Oscars airing so that you can listen to the final part and then watch the Oscars and then hope that none of the people that win an Oscar do what this guy did.
Oh, no.
Today we are talking about Gig Young. Have you ever heard of Gig Young?
That name sounds familiar.
I literally had never heard that name in my life.
I've heard the name.
Well, he is the only Oscar-winning actor that we know of who's committed murder.
Aside from the actors murdering our hearts with their performances.
Oh, Kevin! for those of you still listening,
everybody just was like rolled their eyes and said, fuck this.
A lot of people do. We get a lot of hate on YouTube. Hey. It's okay. Gig Young was a character actor back in the day, and he was associated with some pretty famous people. So I was surprised I had never heard of him. I just had to make sure that we were recording. We are. Can you imagine? He was once married to Elizabeth Montgomery of Bewitched fame.
Samantha,
yeah. Jack Nicholson lost an Oscar to him, and Elaine Stritch lost her virginity to him.
Kate!
He was getting around.
The way you just said that, I'm obsessed. Jack Nicholson lost the Oscar, and Elaine Stritch lost a virginity.
So here we go. I could only find one biography written about him. It's titled Final Gig, The Man Behind the Murder by George Eales. It's really thorough. It was published in 1991, so some of the language he uses is a bit dated, but it's a great book and was my main source for this episode, so I'll definitely link it in the show notes.
Amazing. Any relation to Gigabyte? GB? Gigs?
Is that a drag name?
No. Like the storage amount.
Like a gigabyte.
Yeah.
No relation.
I was just making a stupid joke. I'm sorry. Gigabyte.
No relation.
That's my drag name. Continue.
Wait, you had a different drag name before. What was it?
They change every day.
I see. In the early part of October 1978, 31-year-old Kim Schmidt wrote a letter to her parents describing the apartment she shared with her new husband, 64-year-old Gig Young.
Ooh.
She wrote, quote, "My office is up on the balcony overlooking the living room. The apartment has 20-foot ceilings. Gig looks up here and says, 'How's my Juliet?' And I say, 'Just great, Romeo. Couldn't be better.'" Less than 2 weeks later, both Kim and Gig, her husband of just 3 weeks, were found dead in that apartment. But to figure out how we got here, we should probably start at the beginning. Gig Young was a stage name. His birth name was Byron Ellsworth Barr, and he was born on November 4th, 1913, in St. Cloud, Minnesota. For the sake of clarity, I'm just going to refer to him as Gig. He was the youngest of three, and his parents didn't hide the fact that they viewed his birth as a mistake.
Fuck.
They hadn't wanted another kid, and as you can imagine, this didn't exactly give young Gig a strong foundation growing up. The oldest of the kids, Don, was clearly their parents' favorite. He had their undivided attention for the first 5 years of his life before their second kid, a girl they named Genevieve, came along. So Don had a lot of self-confidence. He had the emotional support of his parents. And when he got older, he went to work with his dad, James, at his dad's canning business. It was a pickling and preserving company.
Ooh, I've been on the pickle side of TikTok recently.
I didn't even know there was such
a
thing.
Yes, there is, Kate. It's all these content creators who make it their job to try different brands of like independent pickles.
Oh, I thought it was people who like pickled things.
That too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and like they'll all switch around their pickle jars and try them out on camera and give reviews.
Oh my.
I've got a lot of links to pickle jars.
You were going to say I've got a lot of time on my hands. Yeah, I guess I'll have to check out the pickling side of you, or no, TikTok. I'm never on TikTok. So James, the dad, was constantly praising Don, who was 7 by the time Gig came along. So while Don was working alongside his dad, anytime James would bring Gig to work with him, he'd introduce him to people by saying things like, and this is a quote, "This is Byron. He's shy and a little bit of a dumbbell, but he's a good boy." So not exactly doing the kid's confidence any favors. And Emma, Gig's mom, was kind of just over-raising kids by the time he came along.
Then stop having them, sweetheart.
Yes. Gig and his sister Genevieve, or Jen as she's called, were just 2 years apart. And Emma was feeling overwhelmed having two toddlers running around.
Ew.
Well, I mean, I get that. Like, a lot of people feel overwhelmed. But rather than, you know, work through that, she found reasons to not be home. Like, she'd be like, "I gotta go assist with this PTA meeting down at the school," or, "Oh, what's that? The church has an event they need organized? Sign me up. See ya, kids."
Was there anyone there to watch them?
And we're gonna talk about her. Emma was also assisting James at his business by doing the bookkeeping, so, like, literally, they were just never home. When she was around, She was often holed up in her bedroom saying that she was exhausted and not feeling well. So, like, even when she was there, she wasn't there. Gig, being the youngest and receiving the least amount of attention and love from his parents, was an extremely insecure and timid, anxious child, which sadly would stay with him his entire life.
Damn.
The mommy issues are in full force with this one, and we're going to see it play out many times over. And I do just want to say there is brief mention of child sexual abuse in this episode, so listen with caution. Since their parents weren't around to look after them, Gig and Jen were looked after by a woman they referred to as Aunt Jessie. Their older brother Don was already working at the canning factory at this point, so he wasn't around. It was just the two little ones. Jessie was the adopted daughter of Emma's stepmother, but she didn't really get along with her adoptive parents, so Emma and James were like, why don't you come live with us? You can watch our younger two kids because we're never home and we don't want to. So
we just don't want to.
I mean, that was their truth. So Jessie moved in. She was in her late teens at that point and was good at winning kids over. I think Jen and Gig probably looked at her as like the cool older sister kind of, because she was, you know, younger and was always like, you know, playing with them and making sure that they were well taken care of. And for Gig, she was basically like the mother figure that he was wanting in his life. Yeah. But Aunt Jessie over there had some issues.
Oh, shit.
And really had no business taking care of children.
My God. How come?
Well, it started out seemingly innocent. Gig confided in her about problems he was having at school with some of the other kids, and she doted on him, always complimenting him. You're such a handsome boy. Oh, you're so smart. Things he'd never been told by his own parents. And he began to feel a special bond with her. But then things started to change. On weekends, she gave him his bath, and she would use this time to sexually abuse him. He was still really young at this point and didn't understand what was happening exactly, but he knew it was his little game, quote unquote, with Aunt Jessie that he had to keep a secret.
This is my mind is going different places. This is horrible. But have you ever seen or read The Perks of Being a Wallflower?
I've seen it, but I don't really remember it. It was so long ago.
Yeah. It just reminded me of that movie.
Is that what happens in that movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It turns out that the aunt had been molesting the main character as a child, and she died in a car accident, and he felt like it was his fault for some reason. It reminded me of that story because I watched it recently, but
highly recommend that, everyone. In so long. Slowly, Aunt Jessie began turning on Gig, making sure to point out that Don was actually her favorite, not him. And she would lavish all this praise on Don and then make fun of Gig, calling him needy and sensitive.
This is making me sick.
It is sickening.
Was she sexually abusing any of the other kids?
No, not to my knowledge.
Just Gig?
Yeah. Which had to have a deep impact on him psychologically because he worshipped her. And she turns that around and uses it against him. I hit the wall.
Oh.
I was just like, Kate,
she just looked over and stroked the wallpaper.
The wall. The abuse from Jessie and the neglect by his parents started to take its toll, not just on Gig's mental health, but his physical health as well. He suffered from what his biography describes as minor convulsions. And one morning he woke up and just couldn't move his neck. A chiropractor had to come out to the bar house twice a day for a week, making adjustments on him until he could move again, which is like,
oh my God,
wild.
That's insane.
His older brother, Don, who was in his early teens at this point, was in charge of looking after Gig and Jen when there were no adults around. And Don was pretty aggressive. He would just demand that his younger siblings do whatever it was he wanted while he was in charge. So he seems like an asshole. Gig developed an attitude of trying to please, trying to be the good boy, trying to win approval. But unfortunately, people saw that as weakness. And particularly with the adults in his life, they saw him as a victim.
Oh, Kate, this is touching on my own psychological issue.
Oh, no.
It's okay.
Oh, no.
I'm working through them.
When Kevin says he's working through them, he's literally sitting in the chair, like doing this dance and kind of like bopping, like physically trying to get
dancing through the pain.
Yeah, he's getting his feelings out. Oh, shake it out, shake it out.
No, no, no. I get it though. Like I relate to this. Like be like experiencing abuse, not sexual in my case, but like physical abuse, and then having, you know, wanting to make people like you and love you, and it's so painful to like experience that when you're not getting anything back. Anyway,
and then when it's used against you,
and when it's used against you, and it's like, you know, you're just doing what you can to receive some kind of love and affection.
Right. And because you haven't experienced what unconditional, true parental love is, you don't know that the abuse you're getting is abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so
yeah,
unfortunately, it's a pattern that's going to continue in his life.
Oh, I feel so bad for him.
It's a really sad story all around. Like, there are parts where you, when he's an adult, where you're mad, but like when he's a kid, you're just like, oh, dude, like you didn't have much of a chance. Gig's second grade teacher was a real bitch, and it seemed like she singled him out as the weak kid that she could make an example out of. So she used to beat him with a garden hose in front of other kids. Kevin is speechless.
I can't. You guys.
This is a rough one.
This is just disgusting, and why the older generations are so fucked up.
I don't even know. Because, I mean, back then, we're going to get into some therapy talk. I think it comes up in part two that we'll get into more of that. But it's like people just didn't know what was happening. Like, and how to treat
it. Well, yeah, and no one was thinking. I mean, no one was, like, actively considering mental health as, like, a foregoing thing that you should consider.
They were like, oh, it's totally fine to beat kids with hoses or rulers because that's how we discipline them. Like, that was the mindset. Yikes.
It's abuse.
The only person Gig told about the beatings was his sister Jen, who really was the only one in his family he was close to, and he made her promise not to tell their parents because he was afraid they would punish him even further. Like, he felt like he was doing something wrong.
Oh.
This poor kid.
I know.
The abuse just made him even more diffident, and it seemed like a cycle he couldn't get out of. At home, he was abused by his caretaker, picked on by his brother, ignored by his parents, and then he gets to school, which you would hope could at least provide a little reprieve, but instead his teacher is abusing him. So people just saw him as an easy target.
My aunt did that to me as well, I remember. Like,
that bitch.
She didn't beat me, but she would be really mean.
It's a psychological abuse.
Yeah,
it's a mental abuse.
It's mental abuse.
Emotional
like
abuse.
Making me eat stuff I didn't want to, and like one time, well, I don't want to tell this on the pod.
We'll talk about
it later.
Okay, okay. Then one day, another student's mom visited the classroom, and the teacher pulled out a ruler to point to something at the board. But when she took the ruler out, this mom noticed that Gig immediately held out his hands like he was expecting the teacher to strike him with the ruler. So the mom calls Emma and told her what happened and said, you know what this means, right? It means she has struck him so many times that he just assumes when she pulls out the ruler, that's what's about to happen. Yeah. Emma thankfully did not ignore the situation.
Thank God.
And she pulled Gig out of that school and enrolled him elsewhere, but he had to repeat the second grade. The next summer, when Gig was 8, he was staying with some family friends at their lake house, probably as a way to get away from his own family for a while, because his parents weren't with him. And honestly, they were probably happy to have one less kid in the house. The property included a nice big farm with plenty of room for Gig to play and fish, but he was still pretty reserved, like kind of quiet. So someone at the house, I'm not sure if it was another kid or one of the adults, but someone gave him a glass of home-brewed alcohol to help him loosen up at 8 years old. He got totally drunk. He loved it. And they called his parents to tell them what had happened. And of course, that led to them lecturing Gig. Not the people who provided the alcohol, but Gig.
That's messed up. Yeah. I think it was high school, like 9th grade or something. And I went to the, like, do you remember Relay is for Life?
That sounds familiar.
It was like walking for, you know, for breast cancer.
Okay.
Something like that. Really?
Yeah.
And so it was like an all night thing. Like it took place in the park in the tiny town that I lived in.
Okay.
And so it was like an all night thing. You know, you'd walk around the track, do laps, take turns, you know, do just walk until the morning. And, you know, there were a lot of people that hanging out there. It was down by the river.
Yeah.
And I had a can of Pepsi that I was drinking, and I started to feel like really weird. I didn't know. Someone had spiked it, like the older kids.
Oh.
They had spiked it with Wild Turkey. And I didn't know. Like, I'd never tasted alcohol before. And so it made me really weird and, like, kind of sporadic and crazy. And people got worried and they were like, what's wrong with you? And they had me sit down for a little while.
Oh,
and then
goodness.
It was fine. But, yeah, then one of the kids who did it came up to me, like, a year later and was like, oh, yeah, we totally, like, spiked your Pepsi.
What an asshole.
I know, right?
I hate it. So Gig's parents are basically telling him, like, you can't do anything right. Why can't you be more like your big brother, Don? Ugh. That kind of stuff. Gig became really withdrawn from his family, with the exception of his sister. Besides Jin and their family dog, Shep, Gig was a loner. So to pass his time, he would hang around the city dump for hours, listening to the adventures of homeless people, which were known as Knights of the Road. And maybe that's still a term, I'm not sure. And he would invite these people back to his house and make them food.
That's nice. Dangerous, but nice.
But yes. He had a good heart.
Yeah.
And back then, there was they were called hobo signs, which were symbols that homeless people or poor people would leave for others, indicating whether a house was safe to ask for food or if a particular area was dangerous. Mm-hmm. So like a circle with nothing in it meant there was nothing to be gained at that particular location. But a circle with a diagonal line through it meant it was a good road to follow. So there's a whole chart online of these symbols. It's really fascinating.
That's fascinating.
Gig's home was marked with a symbol indicating it was a good place for a handout. So homeless people were frequently coming by for food, and only Gig and Jin knew why. And their parents were just like, hi, this is weird, I guess, but here's some bread. Like, they couldn't figure out why all these people are coming over asking for food.
Well, I mean, I guess it was nice that they went along with it.
Yeah, when they were around.
When they were there.
By the time Gig was finishing up elementary school, his dad was already pressuring him to spend his free time working at the factory, like his perfect can-do-no-wrong older brother was doing. And Gig did work there for a short time, but he didn't put much effort into the job because he had other ideas about
what to do with those pickles.
He had other ideas about what he wanted to do in life.
Mm.
He'd secretly been reading his sister's movie magazines and fantasizing that he was the leading man, the go-to guy, the hero. But he didn't tell anyone his dream, not even Jin, because he was afraid his family wouldn't approve or they'd make fun of him. But when he was 12, he got a job as an usher at a movie theater in his hometown. And this was the escape he'd been looking for. He got to spend hours watching movies and imagining it was himself on the screen. And he loved it. And I'm also like 12 is really young, but maybe back then that was kind of standard.
This is the time when we had like little kids doing everything.
I mean, because this is the 1920s, so so I guess that was okay.
Child labor at the no laws.
Once Gig entered high school, things started to turn around for him.
Oh, good. Finally.
Yes.
Fuck.
Mentally, he was more mature. Physically, he was gaining muscle and had turned into a good-looking guy. He was a hottie. And, like, everyone in town talked about it.
Lucky.
And the fact that he was Don Barr's little brother actually worked in his favor because Don had been really popular and athletic. So Gig was sort of automatically accepted by association.
Oh.
Plus, his dad's business was now wildly successful. And the Barr family had some serious money. Suddenly, Gig is wearing nice, fancy new clothes. He's driving the family car around. He's getting an allowance. So even if he was feeling shy on the inside, he was able to mask it on the outside. Then, much to his delight, his brother got a job in Russia. And Gig was like, bye! So a burden was lifted. He didn't feel like he was in Don's shadow anymore. And he was relieved. I don't know what I was going to say there.
He was ecstatic.
He was, really.
Fuck off to Russia, Don.
That's basically how he felt.
What was Don doing in Russia? Do we know?
It had something to do with canning
with pickles.
And like something along those lines. I don't remember the details of it, but like something in there.
The Russians needed to figure out how to make better pickles.
Maybe that was it.
That's what happened.
It was at this point in Gig's life that he became increasingly interested in the opposite sex. He would later describe himself as having intense sexual urges at a young age. Gig was very flirtatious and girls liked him, but his mom didn't like the idea of him dating.
Who gives a shit? She hasn't been around.
Exactly. He had his eye on a girl at his school, so he worked up the courage to ask her out, and she said yes. And he was really proud of himself that he'd like been able to, you know, stand up for himself and have the confidence to ask her. But at the last minute, the girl canceled. And so he was like, what did I do wrong? He was so upset. Finally, his mom admitted to him that she had called the girl's mother and made her cancel. And when he asked her why, she said, well, she's not a very nice girl.
Oh.
I don't even think Emma had met this girl. She just didn't want Gig dating
anybody.
Yeah.
I remember writing in eighth grade, I had decided like I needed to like try to find a girlfriend to be normal, which I eventually did. But Beth.
Wasn't her name
we
Beth?
We talked about
yeah,
this.
I think it was Beth.
But there were two others that I asked out and I wrote letters to. You know how, remember the letter writing?
Oh, yeah. Of
circle,
course.
Circle, yes or no.
Yes.
And it was never, I wrote these like long letters, not about how I thought they were pretty or anything. It was always like, you're just such a kind and generous person.
Aww.
And like, I know we don't know each other very well, but I would love if maybe we could spend some more time together. And they were always so nice. Like, they came up to me and they were like, thank you for this. This was really sweet, but no. And I was like, I was like, hey, fair enough.
And you were like, phew.
It's like, oh, God, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that.
Dodge that
what
bullet.
Are these urges? It's not natural. Yes, it is.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
We can talk about it after.
Kate, you're dredging. My whole childhood is coming back right before my eyes.
Oh, no. So, okay, back to Gig.
Yes, back to take it away. Go ahead.
It wasn't just the females that were attracted to Gig. He also caught the eye of several males around town. Gig wasn't attracted to males, but he noted how his parents wouldn't let him date girls, but didn't bat an eye when older males started paying attention to him. One was a teacher of Gig's who would stop by the Barr family home just to visit Gig or invite him on walks. And they were like, this isn't unusual, not at all. A teacher singling out a student and wanting to spend time with him outside of class, no big deal. Weird. At 16, Gig lost his virginity to a 28-year-old woman. Yuck.
Wait, how old was he?
16.
Oh.
Illegal. Wrong. Child abuse. Mommy issues. By the early 1930s, the Barr family was beginning to feel the effects of the Great Depression.
Ah.
They went from being one of the most prosperous families in town to losing the business. Gig's father, James, found a job in Washington, D.C., so he relocated and sent money back home whenever he could. Jen earned her teaching certificate and accepted a job in Motley, Minnesota, which was about 65 miles from St. Cloud. So she's out of the house, and Don was still in Russia. So that just left Gig and his mom. And by this point, Emma was deeply depressed, and her physical health was deteriorating. So Gig would do whatever he could to make things easier for her, but I think it was also to try and win her approval. It's just that like constant, like, how can I make you love me kind of behavior.
Ew.
In order to afford living expenses, Emma rented out rooms in their house, and Gig had to give up his bedroom and sleep on the porch. The porch was enclosed and it had storm windows, so he wasn't exposed to the elements, but it still got really cold in the winter, so he'd have to heat up jars of water and place them between his blankets to try and stay warm. Yeah. Gig no longer had the money to pay for gasoline, so he couldn't take the family car out. His allowance had stopped, so there wasn't much he could do in the way of socializing, and his family were no longer big shots in town, which is a real confidence killer for him. So Gig escaped to the movies. It didn't matter if he didn't have money for a ticket because he had stayed friends with the manager from his ushering days.
Yeah, he did.
He dreamed of one day playing the romantic lead, and he was starting to pursue that direction. He was cast as Laurie in his school's production of Little Women, and he was doing really well in school. He was in his junior year and was on the student council and the debate team, and He had fallen in love. Her name was Kay, and the two met through Jen.
You're like, he met Kay, and she was 36.
No, she was actually his age.
Okay, that's finally nice. I never got the attention of older people when I was a teenager, and that's for the best. I don't need to feel bad about that, right?
Right.
Okay.
No, you're doing well. Don't spit out your coffee.
That's awful.
So Gig and Kay spent as much time together as possible, despite not living close to each other. He would hitchhike 40 miles just to spend a Saturday with her. Different times. I would not hitchhike 1 mile. I would get murdered.
That's male privilege.
That's wild to me.
Hitchhike 40 miles one way?
40 miles one way. What? Yeah. The two loved spending time at the lake or going to the movies, and it was pretty much assumed by both families that they would eventually get married. But then James contacted Emma and Gig and said it was time for them to move to Washington, D.C. So just as Gig has somewhat rebounded from the effects of the Great Depression, and he's like got this lead role in Little Women, and he's doing so well in school, and he has a girlfriend, he has to give it all up.
I mean, at this point, just let him stay.
With who?
Well, I don't know. On a porch with jars of hot water.
The apartment his dad was renting was pretty far from his new high school, so he was actually able to convince his parents to let him move into a row house closer to his school. His landlady was named Mrs. Keynes, and she instantly became a mother figure for Gig.
Oh, God. I'm glad you said that, because I was like, and then what did she do?
Right. No, she did not abuse him.
Okay, good.
But she did fulfill this emptiness that he was feeling.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. They developed a pretty close friendship, and she actually is the first person that he told that he wanted to be an actor.
And she was encouraging.
Oh, very encouraging. Good. He would tell her about his track meets at school, and she would shower him with praise, saying she wasn't at all surprised that he was such an athlete. She'd boost his ego, telling him he was far more attractive than any of the actors in the fan magazines. And when he told her that he wanted to be an actor, she was like, yeah, I know you can do it. Like, for sure.
We all need a Mrs. Keynes.
A Mrs. Keynes. Then up pops his dad again, saying he's taken a new job in North Carolina and the family would be moving once again. Gig wasn't having it. He was 18 or 19 at this point, and he did not want to return to small town life. He liked the energy of Washington, D.C. He liked that city vibe. And he'd gotten a job at a drugstore, so he was able to pay his own way. He put his foot down and said he wasn't going. And it's really the first time he ever stood up to his family like that.
Good. Good for him.
And Mrs. Keynes said he could continue living with her, and his family agreed.
Good.
Yes. Middle-aged Mrs. Keynes and the teenage Gig were an unlikely pair, but very close friends. At the time, walkathons were a big thing in Washington, which were a combo of variety entertainment and dance competitions.
What?
And Gig and Mrs. Keynes would often go as spectators and cheer on the contestants. That doesn't exist anymore. Like, can you imagine just going down to the dance competition and cheering on the couples?
Oh my God, I want to do that.
It would be fun.
I always loved that scene in the Golden Girls. There's an episode of Golden Girls where they go to an all-night dance competition for charity.
Oh.
And you have to keep dancing with your partner to win the the thing.
Wait, then Rose does it, right?
Yeah, Rose does it.
I was going to say, it's all coming back to me.
And she's like, you better watch out. And then obviously a stunt double does it and does all these flips and stuff.
Yeah, I do remember this.
Such a good episode.
Oh, I heart Betty White. So Mrs. Keynes told Gig that with his good looks, he could probably make some pretty decent money as a ballroom dance instructor, because people would be like, ooh, I want to take dance lessons from this guy.
Like Rudolph Valentino with the taxi dancing.
Oh.
Like the hot dance teacher.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
And it probably paid some pretty decent tips. So he started doing that part time. She also encouraged him to join the local theater troupe, which he did. And his roles kept getting bigger and bigger. And of course, he loved the attention he got from the audience, because it was a real ego boost if he got a laugh or when everybody was clapping for him.
I've always often thought about this. One of the reasons that people go into the arts, I wonder, is not feeling like you're part of something.
Yep.
Or not 100%. Getting that attention that you need to have confidence as someone who's, a youth growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can get it from people by doing this specific thing.
Yeah, and it's immediate.
And it's immediate. It's like a fix almost, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yep.
Just throwing that out there. Some psychology.
And I'm catching it.
Oh.
All right.
Kate just matrixed back. And
If only this were a visual medium, you all would be amazed.
You guys don't even know the half of it.
When Gig finally worked up the courage to tell his parents, hey, I'm doing theater and I love it and this is what I want to do with my life, his dad was like, I don't think so.
Oh, shut your mouth, David.
James.
Same thing.
James did not approve of the influence Mrs. Keynes had over his son, so he arranged a job for him as a bookkeeper.
Ew. I mean, yay, but we all need bookkeepers, but...
But ooh to deciding, no, this is what you're going to do.
Deciding for him.
Yeah, because no. Gig at this point is a full-grown adult.
He can decide for himself.
Exactly, but James is trying to control him. Gig obliged, because that is what he did, and he started the bookkeeping job. But of course, he hated it and wasn't good at it. Math wasn't his thing, so then he was moved to the switchboard, which he was even... worse at. So they made him the parking attendant.
Damn, that's demotions.
But Gig didn't really care because he had other things on his mind, like the swelling of his testicles, which turned out to be inflammation of the epididymis, which is the tube where sperm cells mature and are stored. I know, I took a real sharp turn there. Look
what?
On your face. I'm sorry.
I didn't even know that anatomy.
Yep.
The what?
Epididymis.
Epididymis?
Yeah. I had to look up how to pronounce it. Epididymis.
Well, that's interesting. Tell me more about these old testicles.
I will. So his doctor prescribed calcium therapy and a move to a warmer climate. Calcium therapy isn't going to do jack shit. You need antibiotics to treat it. So when his condition didn't improve, he had a vasectomy.
So it's an infection? Like
yeah,
he had an infection.
It's like an inflammation of this.
Of that tube.
Real important tube. Yeah.
Well, I need to look at a diagram.
It's there. It's in there. On the Google.
I thought you meant like, you're like, yeah, it's, you got it.
I mean, you do. Moving on.
Sorry.
After the vasectomy, despite that the calcium therapy hadn't worked, his doctor's course of treatment did give him an excuse to go to California.
Hey.
Because the doctor was like, you need a warmer climate. And Gig was like, doctor's orders. Guess I got to go to Hollywood.
To Hollywood.
So he used that excuse to tell his family he was moving.
I imagine he's drinking a big thing of milk because you said calcium therapy. And he's like, off to Cali.
Milk. It does a body good.
And your testicles, yeah. Apparently.
Which are part of your body. So it all comes
Did you know
circle.
That? So this was fascinating in health class because the like testicles are on the outside of the body because it's too warm inside for them to be on the inside.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
This has been Science 101 with Kevin and Kate. Prior to leaving for the West Coast, Gig followed some advice Mrs. Keynes had given him and got braces to close a small gap between his two front teeth. And with that small cosmetic procedure behind him, he headed to Hollywood, hitchhiking the entire way. He hitchhiked from Washington, D.C. to Hollywood.
That's too far.
That's crazy. Once he got to California, he was determined to make it on his own because he didn't want to have to call his parents and ask for money because they would just think he was a failure. He was like, I've got to do this myself. So he took whatever odd job he could. He pumped gas at a gas station. He mowed lawns, cleaned houses, worked as an auto mechanic and a waiter. And he limited himself to just one meal a day to save money.
He's probably pretty skinny, too.
Ooh. He eventually joined a theater group that was one of these pay-to-play situations, so actors there had to pay dues in order to perform. But Gig, having turned into quite the charmer, worked out a deal where instead of paying the fee, he would help build the sets. Then one day, a fellow actor in this group told Gig that the prestigious Pasadena Playhouse did open readings of plays every Sunday, and they were always looking for actors to come in and audition to read various parts. And Pasadena Playhouse, I mean, it's still a big deal.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's a very prestigious place. Lots of celebrities perform there. It's a big deal.
I didn't know that.
And if they got cast in anything, they would get to work with some of the big names that would perform there, and they wouldn't have to pay any fees for the experience. It sounded like a much sweeter deal than the small theater group he was with, so Gig jumped at the chance. He auditioned 3 times before getting cast in anything, but once he did, he immersed himself in everything the theater had to offer. Gilmore Brown, the founder of the Pasadena Playhouse, which this boggled my mind when I read it because I was like, oh my gosh, like this was back in the day. Like he was studying under the founder of the Pasadena Playhouse. He took him under his wing, and Gig wasn't going to mess around. He devoted his time to rehearsing and studying his roles. And it was during one of these productions that he met a girl named Sheila Stapler. Gig liked her immediately. She was funny. She was really great with comedy. And he was like, hey, you want to maybe go grab a coffee? And she was like, sure. So that kind of became their thing. After rehearsals, they'd go and get coffee together, and they really hit it off.
I like to think that her comedy routine was her walking out on stage with a stapler, and she would just go, I'm Sheila Stapler. I'm sorry.
Don't be. I loved every second of that thought you had.
Thanks.
Gig was getting more and more recognition for his looks. And he was attractive for sure. He definitely had that classic Hollywood leading man look. He was kind of like a George Clooney of the day.
Ah, smooth skin.
Just real charming. He had like kind of a crooked smile and like he really, not like that. Kevin just tried to do an example.
Is that not what a crooked, is crooked smile like?
You know what? I'll show you a picture. It's not what you're doing. Stop doing that. Oh, God. Many described Sheila as being a quote-unquote plain Jane. And this comes up a lot with some of the women he dates. People are like, what could he possibly see in her?
That's mean.
Rude. But Nancy Andrews, an actress who was at the Pasadena Playhouse at the same time as Gig, and she did a lot of stage and film work in her day, she said that it wasn't unusual for ambitious, good-looking guys to pick these plain Janes as partners because they want to be the hot one and the one getting all the attention. And I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense in his case.
I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Be wary of the hot people, y'all.
Do. For sure.
Be very wary.
And this makes a lot of sense when it comes to Gig because he craved attention and his looks were definitely helping him in that area because deep down Gig was incredibly insecure. It started in childhood and it never goes away for him. Sheila loved Gig and was 100% devoted to him. She doted on him and she was very motherly, which is something Gig sought out in his relationships with females. She was very nurturing and did everything she could to encourage him in his career. And in August of 1940, the two went to Vegas and got married.
Hitched.
They didn't have much money. Sophie was working as a car hop to help with bills, which I just love that. I was a car hop. We've talked about this.
Have we?
At Sonic? I roller skated?
That's right. Yeah. I forgot what car hop meant.
Yeah. So she was a car hop, and Gig was taking every acting job he could get. Mm-hmm. His sole focus was on his career. Meanwhile, Sophie is taking care of the house, cooking the meals, and she was the one maintaining correspondence with his family. Because I don't think he wanted to communicate with them until he had a big success to share.
I see.
I think he was feeling insecure and even as an adult was always trying to win their approval. It was after appearing in a play at a small theater that a talent scout from Warner Brothers approached him and said, I think you got the goods, kid. And he invited Gig to come and do a screen test. I think you got the goods, kid. How do they say it in that like...
Oh, that
mid-Atlantic.
The old mid-Atlantic Hollywood. You got the goods, kid.
That's it.
He had a cigarette. You know he had like 3 cigarettes.
At the same time. Sophie Rosenstein, I'm not sure, was directing the screen test. She was a big deal at the studio because she was this top-notch drama coach and talent scout, and she rehearsed the scene with him and showed him how to hit his marks because he didn't know anything about acting on camera. The only film he'd done was a very low budget one that apparently was so bad he denied he was even in it. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's not me.
It wasn't me. Gig's screen test was a bit of a disaster. He couldn't hit his marks and get his lines right. It was one or the other. Like, if he's going to hit his marks, forget the lines. If he's going to hit the lines, he's completely out of the light, out of focus.
I think I've probably told you this story before, Kate, but I'll tell it again and you can cut it if you want. But
let's
I took
it.
A screen act. I took that screen acting course in London when when I was studying
abroad. Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah, and my final was a commercial
yes.
audition. And I had to go in and they handed me the script. I had to memorize it on the spot, go in the room, ask the shot, ask what my marks were. I did like make sure I was like talking through the right stuff and then do the commercial.
And how'd it go for you?
Went okay.
Oh, I thought you told me it was horrible.
I mean, I forgot to ask a couple questions, but you know, I got an A- in the class.
Oh, that's pretty good. Look at you.
It was the thing that I fucked up was being an extra.
Oh.
Because I was overacting.
Oh, that's what I remember.
And then they showed it and he was like, this is what you don't do.
Don't do this.
You don't pull focus or they will ask you to leave.
It's just that you were a superstar, Kevin.
Thank you, Kate.
And you deserve the spotlight. That's all. Gig, on the other hand, his screen test was pretty horrendous.
Whoa.
But Sophie was like, that was sensational. Excellent work. Because she didn't want to bruise his ego. So she's trying to like build up this new actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She did a personality test with him, just asking him some questions about himself, and that's when he was able to turn on that gig young charm. He didn't have a lot of experience, but he did have the it factor, and Warner Brothers signed him to a contract. Part of the job was to attend the social events held by the studio, networking, meeting other actors and executives, putting yourself out there. What are you looking
at? I'm so sorry. Different timelines, but I just imagine like Jane Mansfield bursting into all of those parties. She's been on my mind.
Sure. Understandable. We covered her for a very long time.
You guys go to Patreon. No, I'm serious. And listen to the Jane Mansfield series. It's great.
Well, I mean, they can't. If unless they're
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
go
okay.
to Patreon and sign up.
So Gig was determined to make it in Hollywood, and he insisted that he and Sophie go to every single party. He was like, this is part of the job. I have to see and be seen. But Sophie wasn't into that whole thing. She was a homebody. But she loved Gig and wanted to do everything she could to support him, so she attended every party with him at first. But she was shy. Gig was too, but he could overcome it for a party. He knew how to turn on the charm. But Sophie was always uncomfortable at these events. Here she is, a plain Jane, quote unquote, and she's surrounded by all these glamorous looking people. And even though she and Gig had met doing theater together, she had no ambitions of being an actor or pursuing anything in the entertainment industry.
Sure.
So it just wasn't her vibe. And eventually, Gig stopped inviting her to the parties, which wasn't a great sign. Meanwhile, Gig accepted every role Warner Brothers offered, no matter how small. And this is back in the days of like the contract players. So you could be the lead one day and the next day they could be like, okay, you're going to, you know, walk in the background of that scene and say hello to that waiter. Like, you know, you didn't really have a whole lot of choice.
Because you're under contract. They could just put you wherever they wanted.
Exactly. But Gig felt that by devoting all his time and attention to the studio, it would lead to bigger and better things. He would volunteer to assist with other actors' screen tests. He would drive executives to their meetings if need be. Anything to please. Again, we're seeing his need for approval here. He was cast in a film called The Gay Sisters, which starred Barbara Stanwyck. It's not what you're thinking, Kevin.
No, I know, but we can all laugh at the title. The Gay Sisters.
And Barbara knew this film could be a big break for Gig, so she gave him some acting tips, which clearly worked because when Warner executives saw the raw footage, they were impressed with him. Suddenly, everyone at the studio was losing their minds over this guy because they felt like he was going to be the next Cary Grant or Errol Flynn.
Dang.
So to drum up press for him, the studio enlisted a publicity agent who suggested he change his name to the name of the character he plays in the movie, which was Gig Young. So the posters and ads for the movie read, "And introducing Gig Young as Gig Young." So that was kind of how they were wanting to like draw attention to him.
Oh, interesting.
Because Warner Brothers thought it would put a spotlight on the guy they believed was the next leading man.
The next big thing.
His next film, Old Acquaintance, starred none other than Bette Davis and her eyes.
BD.
Gig really hit it off with his co-star. Like, really hit it off with his co-star. Despite the fact that both were married, they began having an affair.
Are you a Bette Davis fan, Kate?
I don't think I have an opinion one way or the other.
I love her. That's because
I honestly haven't seen a ton of stuff.
So
of hers.
We're gonna watch a movie called Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte.
Okay. Is it a scary movie? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Okay. Sheila chose to believe that the reason Gig often came home late from set was because there were so many production delays caused by the fights Bette would get into with her co-star, Miriam Hopkins. Mm-mm-mm. The fights the women had made the papers, like it was a huge deal. So Gig could point at that and be like, see, yep, right there. They were totally fighting and I had to stay late. So, and Sheila was just like, okay.
That wasn't the case though, was it?
It sure wasn't. Soon after the end of the shoot in 1943, Gig was sworn in to the U.S. Coast Guard. His time there was pretty uneventful, with the exception that it was during this time his mom was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. He was granted 2 emergency leaves to go visit her, and on the first visit, they were able to put their differences aside, and she told him how proud she was of him and the success he was having, and how she really liked Sheila, thought she was a great wife for him. It was like all the love he needed from her when he was growing up, she was finally able to give now that she was on her deathbed.
How nice.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, like, if she regretted how she treated him as a kid, because it kind of sounds like she did. And I feel like that's something that people get to the end of their life and they're just like, what was the point of that?
It's manipulative to the person who... I'm going through this right now with my dad. Like, he's getting sick and older, and we hadn't talked for 7 years. And now all of a sudden, like, I have to be back in his life because he needs it to feel maybe better about himself.
Oh, I didn't look at it that way. That's interesting.
Which is why I'm not going full in, because, like, your missteps in our relationship over the years does not get a pass. Like,
right.
Just because... there's something going on with you that you feel like you need to reconcile.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, but that, no, that's a, I'm glad but you brought that up.
But it's interesting to, it's just, you know, when you get to that point and people are like, oh, now I can get what I need from them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, that's not fair. It's not an equal playing field.
Yeah. On Gig's second visit with his mom, it was clear she was probably not going to make it much longer. Mm-hmm. But his emergency leave was almost over and he was scared to tell her. But he thought, well, if I just leave and don't tell her, that's worse. I can't ghost my own mom. So he finally breaks the news to her that he has to leave and return to the base in California. And she said, quote, that's all right. I'll be leaving soon myself.
I don't love that.
I don't either. And 3 days later,
she died. Okay.
On July 4th, 1945, Gig was released from service because he contracted malaria and he was eager to get back to work at the studio.
Those mosquitoes.
Ugh. Warner Brothers threw a huge cocktail party for him to welcome him home, along with another one of their actors, Ronald Reagan.
Reagan. I look up and I'm in the costume of Reagan from The Exorcist.
Oh.
I can't turn my head all the way around. My head turned all the way around.
Sheila actually did go to this party with him, and it was there she met Sophie Rosenstein, who had helped Gig through his first screen test. Right. Gig and Sheila, along with Sophie and her husband, became good friends. They often went to the beach together, had meals together, and they even bought a plot of land just north of Malibu together where they planned to build a little weekend getaway cottage that they would all share.
Okay.
People did that, great. I guess.
Good for them.
Sophie was also Gig's acting teacher. Other students of hers over the years included Frances Farmer, we're going to cover her, Rock Hudson, and Tony Curtis. And she encouraged Gig to study classical playwrights like Shakespeare and Chekhov to stretch himself, because unfortunately, after World War II, he just wasn't getting very good roles at Warner Brothers. He signed on to play Errol Flynn's brother in a movie because he was always willing to play any part, but Errol Flynn was the it guy at the studio at the time, so playing his brother meant Gig was not going to be seen as a leading man. They dressed him in baggy clothes and directed him to be kind of wimpy and dull. So it didn't really do him any favors for his career. Before the war, he was the hot up-and-comer. But after the war, his career kind of stalled, and Warners ended up dropping him, unfortunately. He does end up working with Warners again, so it wasn't like the end of the road.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a hiccup.
Yeah.
Then in 1949, Gig's brother, Don, died of tubercular meningitis. And I think Gig had a lot of unresolved feelings when it came to Don, which just fed his inner demons. Gig's home life with Sheila wasn't faring so well either. He was staying out later and later, going to more parties without her, so he was never home, and this led to a lot of fights between the two. Gig began confiding all his problems, both professional and personal, to Sophie. And it wasn't long before the two of them began having an affair. Sheila started to catch on and felt betrayed because Sophie had been her friend. Like, Gig had brought the two of them together, and then Sophie betrays her in this way. One night, Gig had gone out partying, presumably with Sophie, and when he returned home, Sheila confronted him, and she was like, "Do I have something to worry about? Like, seriously, Sophie? Really?" Gig lost his shit. He starts shouting at her, smashing furniture, turning over tables and lamps. He went on a rampage. And Sheila was like, "Oh my God, I've got to get out of here. He's going to kill me." She ran to a neighbor's house and asked them if they could come over and help calm Gig down, which they did. And as soon as Gig saw them, he acted like everything was fine. But after that incident, he moved out and filed for divorce. In the divorce proceedings, Sheila cited mental cruelty, and Gig claimed that being around her was, quote, adversely affecting his career and leading him to drink. He'd been a drinker long before he ever met Sheila, and she had done nothing but support his career, so he needs to take a seat.
Several seats.
All of them.
And have a few pickles.
Yeah.
Let's all just while calm you're at down. It.
After his divorce, he started pressuring Sophie to divorce her husband, who happened to be Gig's business manager, mind you. And she was really hesitant to leave him, but eventually she did. And she and Gig were married 2 years later. Once again, people were like, "How could he be with her? She's so plain." People were calling her homely. It's like, what is wrong with people? It's crazy.
I'm sure they were beautiful women.
They were. I saw pictures. They're beautiful. But by all accounts, Gig was incredibly devoted to Sophie. She was a few years older than he was. And once again, she was kind of like a mother figure for him. She was his teacher, advisor, confidant.
He's looking for a mommy.
Mm-hmm. People started speculating that because Gig married, quote, plain James, deemed unattractive by Hollywood standards, that perhaps he was gay. Not sure how they made that leap.
I mean, people still do that.
Being thought of as gay was something Gig was very self-conscious about. And one night he was at a party and he had a lot to drink, and he was leaning on a piano, and the piano player made some kind of remark about his masculinity. I'm not sure what the exact comment was, but Gig had another one of his violent outbursts, like the one he'd had with Sheila, only this time he starts punching the guy. Until finally Sophie and a couple of her friends were able to pull him away and get him outside. And she was like, "You know what? I think it's time for us to go home." So she gets him into the passenger seat of their car, and as she drove them home, Gig, for no apparent reason other than he was trying to release some pent-up hostility, I guess,
sure,
grabs a knife that he just happened to keep in the glove compartment and started slashing at the roof of the car until the canvas was in shreds.
What the fuck?
Sophie didn't seem alarmed. If I were her, I would be terrified. But she just told him, "You should repeat this story at parties so that it doesn't seem like this ominous violent incident. Like, spin it so it becomes just a light cocktail conversation," which is really interesting.
It's funny how people, like, cover up abusive things with, like, light humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was always looking for ways to promote him and his career.
But she's also in a relationship with him.
I'm not saying any of it is
healthy. No, of course you aren't. I'm just, you know, that just boggles me even more on the situation.
She even got him a new agent, which helped him land the role of an alcoholic composer opposite James Cagney in the film Come Fill the Cup. But as the studio execs watched the dailies, they didn't think Gig was very good, and they were ready to fire him. But James Cagney pulled him aside, similar to what Barbara Stanwyck had done for him, and gave him some acting tips. Gig received his first Oscar nomination for his role. He lost to Carl Malden for A Streetcar Named Desire, but it definitely made Hollywood take notice. Unfortunately, shortly after they married, Sophie was diagnosed with cervical cancer.
No.
And the doctor told Gig it didn't look good.
Damn.
Gig didn't want to upset Sophie. This is crazy to me. So he made the doctor promise not to tell her she had cancer. And the doctor was like, "Okay."
I mean, why wouldn't she want to know? What? How is that helpful?
I mean, the only thing I can think is that that was at a time when I guess they told the husband because he was the man, and like whatever the man said went. Like, that's the only thing I could think, because why would a doctor agree to that? You know? So she just thought she had something wrong with her stomach. Although as time went on, I think she probably did realize what was happening, but both she and Gig were trying to spare each other, it sounds like. Sophie's health declined over the next year. She had to quit working, and then she became mostly bedridden, and then she went into the hospital where she did pass away. Gig went into a deep depression when Sophie died, because not only had he lost his wife, but also his cheerleader, his advisor, all these roles that she was playing for him. So he began drinking a lot more. He had insomnia, he was lonely, but he wasn't exactly ready to get back into the dating world. And when people would ask him things like, oh, so you're seeing anyone? Like, he just did not know how to handle that. So he drowned himself in his work. He started the film Torch Song, starring Joan Crawford, and he and Joan got along really well. After rehearsals, they'd hang out in her dressing room and have a drink, and she just thought he was great. She always called him darling and found him delightful.
Darling.
Then one weekend, Gig was out with some friends in Palm Springs, and Joan Crawford also happened to be there, so she invited him out to dinner. And he basically spent the entire time talking about Sophie and how amazing she was and how much he missed her. And Joan was acting all sympathetic and caring, and then she asked Gig to come home with her. And he was appalled. He had just spent the entire evening talking about his dead wife, so he declined. After that, Joan completely ignored him on set. And when Torch Song was released, most of Gig's scenes had been cut, which he believed was Joan's doing, but there's nothing to verify that.
Wow. He could have had slept with both the stars of whatever happened to Baby Jane.
I have seen that movie.
It's wild.
Yeah. Gig wanted to get away from Hollywood for a while. He was just like, I need a change of scenery. So he moved to New York and decided to focus on theater. But Gig was horrible at memorizing lines, which just added to his anxiety. So it would take him a long time to get his performance to where it needed to be. Usually, though, once he did, he got good reviews. It was during a play performance in New York that he met Sherry Britton, who was a famous burlesque performer. She'd gone backstage to visit another actor in the show, which is when she met Gig. And she and Gig began dating, but both had a fear of intimacy, so nothing physical happened between them for a while. And when they did start having sex, Gig was unable to orgasm, which is something that he would have trouble with throughout his life. Neither of them seemed bothered by it, and Gig ended up proposing to her, but she freaked out, again, her fear of intimacy, and she hooked up with another guy, and then she and that guy called Gig up basically to laugh at him. She regretted it years later. She said it was like the cruelest thing she had ever done, but once again, it's Gig feeling betrayed by a woman in his life. Gig's next great love was Elaine Stritch. The two met at a party Elaine was throwing, and Gig had accompanied a friend. The party went until about 4 in the morning. Elaine said, because I'm from the Midwest and can't stand waking up to a lot of dirty dishes, I was rinsing glasses. When I looked up from the sink, Gig Young was still there, so he helped with the dishes. Gig was smitten with Elaine, but she had a crush on someone else. Only that guy wasn't into her because she was a virgin and was saving herself for marriage. Meanwhile, Gig is sending her flowers, constantly trying to get her to go out with him, and he didn't care that she was a virgin. He just genuinely liked her. Mm-hmm. Eventually, she began falling in love with him. He was really sincere and kind, and it was the first time he'd really felt happy since Sophie had passed. Gig made it clear he intended to marry her, but Elaine said she absolutely would not marry outside the Catholic Church.
Oh, okay.
She was a devout Catholic, as was her whole family. She was brought up in a convent. Her uncle was a cardinal, so religion was really important to her.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. Gig and Sophie were wed in a civil ceremony, so the Catholic Church shrugged their shoulders and said, "Man, that's fine." Mm. But since Gig's first marriage had ended in divorce, the only way Elaine and Gig could marry is if they could prove that either Gig or Sheila had not been baptized, because then the church would see it as a non-sacramental union, and Elaine could apply for what's called a special privilege solution.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's so much, where the church would consider Gig's first marriage dissolved. I know nothing about
the
Catholic religion.
Henry VIII bullshit.
I don't know if it's still the case today, but it's wild to me that the church had that much power over who could and could not get married. Gig said to Elaine, "I'm going to make this happen. I want to meet your parents. I will check with the Methodist church my family attended when I was a kid and make sure I wasn't baptized. I'll convert to the Catholic faith. I'm all in." So hearing that, of course, Elaine was like, "This is the most romantic man I've ever met in my life." And so she, too, was all in. Prior to that, she never really considered marriage, but she found herself madly in love.
Wow.
That summer, Elaine was doing a show in St. Louis, so Gig went there to meet her, and her parents traveled from Michigan to see her in the show as well. Gig took Elaine and her parents out to dinner and made his intentions clear. He told them, "I'm taking your daughter to St. Cloud to meet my sister. While we're there, I'll check on my baptism status, and then we're going to move to Hollywood because I've got a film job lined up." Before the couple left, Elaine's dad was just like, "Make sure this is what you really want, because marriage is for life." And her mom told her, and this is a quote, "God, he's the most attractive man. Marry him in a cornfield if they won't allow it in the church."
Oh, I like this mom.
I do too.
She knows what's important.
In St. Cloud, they met with the minister of the church, who told them there was no record of Gig being baptized. So they were thrilled, obviously. And once back in Hollywood, Gin began studying the Catholic religion with a priest. He and Elaine dated for a year and lived together but did not have sex. Then one day, they were out on a drive on the Pacific Coast Highway. The sun was shining, the wind was in their hair, and Gig was feeling some romantic feelings.
Ooh.
And Elaine was feeling some romantic feelings. And things started getting kind of spicy.
Spicy and smoky, and our loins are on fire.
And Gig was like, "You wanna?" And she was like, "You wanna?" So the two stopped for a romantic dinner in Malibu, had a couple of martinis, and then rented a motel and got busy. Elaine said she felt a little guilty, but happy. And Gig was probably the happiest he'd ever been, at least since Sophie. And then it all came crashing down. A secretary from the church in St. Cloud called up the priest Gig had been studying with and said that Gig had actually been baptized, and she sent him the baptism certificate to prove it. The priest immediately stopped Gig's lessons, and that was that. Elaine and Gig were devastated. They tried to continue their relationship, but knowing they could never get married, they ultimately parted ways.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. They did stay friends, though.
Just because of the religion shit?
Yep.
Oh, God. Literally.
Career. I just got that. Oh, yeah. Career-wise, Gig didn't want to jump right back into theater because there just wasn't any money in it. So he took every role Hollywood offered him, including a hosting gig for the TV series Warner Brothers Presents, where Gig would interview the biggest star on the lot for that week. He hated the job because it wasn't an acting role, but it came with a big salary, and probably the most notable interview he did for the series was one with James Dean. You can watch it on YouTube. It's pretty eerie because the whole interview, Dean is talking about the importance of driving carefully. And then shortly afterwards, that same year was when he was killed in a car crash. So it's just like one of those spooky things. No, not yet.
Ooh.
The studio held a big celebratory party for the series, but Gig didn't know who to bring. So a Warner Brothers executive suggested actress Elizabeth Montgomery, who was making a movie at the studio at that time. This is before she became super famous for her role in Bewitched. Apparently, Elizabeth had had a crush on Gig for a while, just from seeing him on screen, and used to tell her friends she was going to marry him one day. Gig had some... What are you doing with
You know the Bewitched, like...
Oh, yeah, the nose.
I was just trying to do that.
You just look like something was wrong with your mouth.
My crooked smile. A bag of tricks over here.
Wow. Kevin's in his own closet today.
And not the one that I had to grow up in rural West Virginia.
Exactly. Gig had some reservations about dating her because she was a lot younger than he was, almost 20 years. And he was already feeling insecure about getting older, so he was afraid about how the relationship might be perceived. And it didn't help that a lot of Elizabeth's friends felt that her dad, Robert Montgomery, and Gig were really similar, both in appearance and behavior.
Ooh, that is weird.
But Elizabeth, she was a zesty one, and she was determined to get whatever she wanted. She was really assertive and sociable, which was the opposite of Gig. And he found her a little intimidating, but was also fascinated by her. And she was able to bring out, she was able to bring him out of his shell a little bit and help loosen him up.
Nice. As Megan Thee Stallion would say, real hot girl shit.
There's one story that stuck in my mind when I was reading about her, and it really speaks to her personality. I think she had an interesting sense of humor, let's just say. So Liz had invited Gig and a friend of theirs named Bob to her family's house in New York. And the three of them were having a good time. They're having some drinks. But after a while, Gig was like, this is great, but what are we going to do for dinner? And she was like, oh, well, there isn't really anything here. So the two men started talking about which restaurant they could all go to. And Elizabeth said, we don't need to go out. You two have another drink. I'll go fix us something. So she goes back to the kitchen and she's in there for a while. And finally, she comes out with hamburgers for everyone. But not yet.
No.
So the two guys start eating their burgers. And after Gig took a bite, he said, I don't think much of these. And Bob was like, this is disgusting. Turns out she had made the burgers with dog food. Why even go to that trouble? Why not just go out? But I think that was her sense of humor. Like, she thought that was funny.
I don't think that's funny at all, Elizabeth.
It's odd.
That's a crazy thing to do. I take back my Megan Thee Stallion comment.
Yeah, she's not exactly.
She's not real hot girl shit.
Not really. After Elizabeth and Gig began dating and things were heating up, she started pressing for marriage. Her dad could not stand Gig. His relationship with his daughter was a rocky one already, and Gig was almost as old as he was, and he just didn't like the guy. But she was determined. The only thing was, she really wanted kids. And Gig had had that vasectomy.
I forgot about the vasectomy.
When he told her, she just brushed it off and said, okay, that's fine. We'll have dogs. We'll get a bunch of dogs. She wasn't going to let anything stand in her way. She wanted to marry Gig. In December of 1956, they went to Vegas and got married. She was 24. She'd already been married once. And Gig said he was 38, but actually he was 43. Things were good at first. They were back and forth between LA and New York and had a close group of friends, all with ties to the entertainment industry, all very affluent. Among them were Dominic Dawn and his wife, Lenny. We talked about him when we covered his daughter's murder a while back. And this group would go out dancing, listen to jazz music. So just think of the 1950s, the big city, celebrity, money. They were having the time of their lives. Kevin's nodding. He's
sorry, I'm just imagining it. Like, that is like a fabulous time. You know what I mean?
During this time, Gig also got into playing croquet and was really good. He was actually initiated into the U.S. Croquet Hall of Fame.
Well,
and
fuck.
Now we've all learned that there is a U.S. Croquet Hall of Fame.
Is it still going?
No idea.
Have you ever played croquet?
Yeah. We used to have a croquet set.
We used to, too.
It was like a thing.
We used to do it sometimes. My parents, I was more into bocce ball.
Okay.
I love bocce ball.
I only played that once at a friend's house.
Oh, I want to get a bocce set.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let's do it, Kate.
Let's go. We have to go to Target now, but we'll come right back
and we're going to play bocce inside the closet.
Gig was also nominated for his second Oscar, again for Best Supporting, for his role in Teacher's Pet starring Clark Gable, but he lost out to Burl Ives. He worked with some major stars like Clark Gable, Doris Day, Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, but always in the supporting role. He never seemed to be able to break out of that, which he was really depressed about. That stayed with him. It got him down because he just wanted to be the leading man.
Did he ever get to be a leading man?
No.
No. Okay.
But the Oscar nomination meant more job offers, which meant more money.
Yeah.
And Gig did like his material possessions. He bought himself a fancy Jaguar, a motorcycle, a boat. He liked his big toys. Meanwhile, Elizabeth really wanted kids, despite initially telling Gig she was fine with his vasectomy. So now it's coming back and she's like, actually, I do want kids and this is not okay.
Shit.
So to try and please her, he had the procedure reversed.
That's right. I forgot you can reverse a vasectomy.
Mm-hmm. And they did try for years, but they never did conceive. So they got a couple of dogs, and then one Easter, Gig went out on a bike ride that morning and came back with a tiny little lamb in the basket on his bike, which he presented to Elizabeth. Like, sorry about the kids, here's a lamb, I guess.
And then as a joke, she went into the kitchen and made it into hamburgers.
Don't even say. No, that did not happen. The lamb was real cute at first, but that sucker grew and sprouted horns and turned into a full-fledged buck that destroyed their house.
And their relationship. No, I'm kidding.
That came later. Okay. So eventually they had to give the buck to a zoo. What's with all these like wealthy celebrities back in the day just owning all these big animals like Jane Mansfield and her zoo and Anton LaVey and his lion and them with their lamb? It's like, it reminds me of like in today times of like wealthy people who are like, well, what else am I going to do? I guess now I'll just go to space and like going, taking a rocket and launching their ass into space because they've already done everything and they have everything.
They just have to keep acquiring.
They're like, I guess now we buy an elephant. Let's get an elephant for the yard. It's crazy. Despite putting on an act for the press that they were this happy couple, behind closed doors, it was a different story.
Mm.
Shortly after his Oscar nomination, Gig met an actress named Doris Rich, who was about 10 years older than he was, and she became a sort of mother figure for
mommy.
Him. He was always turning to her for career advice, life advice. They were never involved romantically, but they were friends for the rest of his life. And at home, he'd say to Elizabeth things like, well, Doris thinks I should do this, or Doris made the most amazing observation, which, of course, is going to get annoying after a while. And Elizabeth felt he was more emotionally attached to Doris than to her.
Huh.
Gig was also drinking more and more, and Elizabeth would try to keep up with him by drinking just as much.
Yikes.
Yeah. Gig was never able to win over her dad. The two men despised each other.
Oof.
And Gig felt Elizabeth often saw him as her dad. The two men were getting the same types of roles. They were fairly close in age. So that led to some issues in the marriage.
So kind of a weird situation.
Yeah. Then one day Elizabeth was in their living room and they had end tables on either side of the sofa. She opens a drawer of one of the tables and inside were tons of pictures of Sophie, Gig's former wife. Part of me gets that because she passed away. He loved her. Like, I can see, you know, wanting just to, like, keep those memories of her. I can also see Elizabeth, why she would be furious about that, because it's another woman. And it's like, it's just a weird, it's not a great situation. Like, they're not communicating.
I mean, it's one thing to have a conversation about that. Like,
yeah.
I think people forget that we all lead sort of multifaceted lives with different relationships that end in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you shouldn't have to give up your memories of someone.
Exactly.
To make new memories with someone else.
Right.
So just if they would have talked about that, maybe.
I also think their age difference played into it because she had never experienced losing
someone
a loved one like that.
So she probably wanted all the attention on her, whereas he's older and mm-hmm. is like,
it's just not a great match.
Yeah.
Yeah. They fought a lot, and oftentimes those fights would lead to Gig throwing Elizabeth out of the house, and she'd have to go stay at a friend's. And Gig began turning to other women, most notably Sophia Loren, who he met in Paris while working on a movie. And he was ready to leave Elizabeth Montgomery for her.
Wow.
But Sophia was also married, and when filming wrapped, Sophia wouldn't even take Gig's calls. For her, it was just an affair while working, and she was done after that. Another woman Gig was often seen around town with was Elaine Whitman, and word often got back to Elizabeth that Gig was with Elaine, which, understandably, would make her furious. Elizabeth began her own affair with a man named William Asher, who was directing a movie she was in. Gig couldn't stand the idea of her cheating on him, even though he cheated on her. So he tried to catch her in the act by telling her he was going out of town for the weekend. And then he came back in the middle of the night thinking he was going to find her in bed with Asher, but she was alone. Not great.
No.
None of it's great.
Not at all.
So they're each playing games with each other, throwing accusations around. One day their front door was accidentally left open, and one of their dogs got out and was unfortunately hit by a car and killed. So Gig lashed out at Elizabeth, blaming her. In another fight, Elizabeth stormed out, and then Gig did the same, and neither returned for more than 24 hours. They didn't even think about their other dog, Mr. Boo, who was home alone during that whole time. So when neither had returned after a day, a friend went to check on the dog, and it had destroyed the place. A lamp had been overturned and shattered. The upholstery on the furniture was shredded, and stuffing was everywhere. And poor Mr. Boo was just trembling in a corner. That was the end of their marriage. And Elizabeth did go on to marry William Asher. And the two of them created Bewitched. But they both cheated on each other and eventually divorced. Gig was humiliated that his third marriage had ended. It fed into his insecurities. It was another example of the woman in his life leaving him. And he was alone again, which for a guy who was now 50 years old was pretty daunting. And that is where we're going to end part one.
Damn.
In part two, we'll get into his next two marriages. We've got two more to go.
Oh, God.
And we're going to start to see some pretty disturbing behavior.
Okay.
And he starts to associate with the wrong people.
The wrong crowd.
And then he will meet his final wife. You can let us know your thoughts. Again, you're going to get part two in just a few days. I might release it on Sunday morning before the Oscars or before that. I don't know. We'll see how we're feeling. But I hope you enjoyed this one, and I hope you stay tuned for part two because it's pretty fascinating but also horrible. And you can let us know what you think on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube at
Horrorwood Podcast.
Or you can shoot us an email at
horrorwoodpodcast@gmail.com.
At Gmail?
At Gmail. Sorry. Gmail.
Or you can hop on over to Patreon, like Kevin suggested earlier.
Yes.
And that can be done at
patreon.com/horrorwoodpodcast.
Woo woo.
Listen to the Mansfield episodes, y'all. They're great.
I'm glad you think so.
No, I loved that series. Yay. I told you. Love it.
Love it. Love it.